It's jobs. 2012's general election 14 months away, but the issue is clearly jobs. Jobs growing from a thriving economy. We're discussing the struggling economy and the political implications with economist Robert Reich on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you policymakers and decision makers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating 41 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television, this is the Friday, September 9 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Welcome to Iowa Press, our 41st broadcast season, and thank you for your patience during our summer break. Since the Clinton administration turned over the White House keys 10 years ago, few in that administration have kept as high a profile as our guest today. Robert Reich served in the Clinton as well as the Ford and Carter administrations. Today, he's considered one of the nation's top economists and political observers. As Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, Mr. Reich's decisions and presidential influence directly affected American workers. He's a teacher, serving on the Harvard, Brandeis, and University of California faculties, a writer, authoring 13 books, and a political columnist. But right now, he's our guest today. Professor Reich, welcome back to Iowa Press.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And across the Iowa Press table, Associated Press senior political writer Mike Glover and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Mr. Reich, let's step back and take a look at what's going on in Washington right now. President Obama is in the midst of a lot of turmoil. Give me your critique of President Obama's performance so far in office.
I have enormous respect for the president. I've met with him a number of times. I advised him after he was elected president, before he became, before the inauguration, and he's one of the most intelligent people, I think, who have ever occupied the White House. Having said that, though, I wish he would be a little bit more combative. I wish he would take the Republicans on a little bit more. It's very clear he's not going to get any Republican votes,
right, not
for this jobs package, certainly. And my hope is that not only will he take it to the country, but he will have a jobs package that is large enough, significant enough, bold enough to deal with the problems of unemployment that we are facing today. And if Republicans don't go along, he will make it the centerpiece of his 2012 election.
Is that where we're at now, the start of the 2012 campaign? And should it be?
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, in any rational world, we would have a campaign that was much shorter. But yes, we're already in the gravitational pull of the 2012 election. Certainly the Republicans are already taking every pot shot they possibly can at the president. I think we were actually in the campaign beginning in 2010 when Mitch McConnell, the head of the Republicans in the Senate, said his number one priority, and the Republicans' number one priority, was unseating Barack Obama. I found that to be an incredible statement. I mean, given the problems that this country has, how can you say your number one priority is to unseat the incumbent president?
Let's turn back to the first stimulus that President Obama signed into law in 2009. What went wrong with that stimulus? What do you see as the failing points of that?
Well, we know that the stimulus went right in the extent that it created or saved 3 million jobs, and that is a figure that is widely accepted as truth in terms of nonpartisan economists and analysts looking at it. But it didn't create or save more jobs than that because it was too small relative to the falloff in consumer demand. Remember, consumer spending is about 70% of the total economy. We now know something we didn't know then. We now know that in 2008, consumer demand dropped dramatically. In fact, the entire economy contracted. At the end of 2008, we saw that the fourth quarter, we were contracting really almost 9% on an annualized basis. That's a huge drop. The fact of the matter is, that that stimulus should have been larger and it should have been more directed at job creation. Having all those tax breaks in that stimulus did not generate directly jobs because people who are scared, who have a lot of debt overhang, when they get a tax break, what do they do with it? Well, they use it to pay off their debts, not to buy and create more jobs.
Let's talk about the current recession and its causes. There are some who suggest that the deregulation which occurred during the Clinton administration, when you were sharing power with Bill Clinton in the White House, that was one of the causes of the housing meltdown, the financial debacle, and that deregulation was a bad idea. Do you agree?
I think deregulation of financial markets was a bad idea. I think getting rid of the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated commercial from investment banking, was the beginning of the problem. There were subsequent problems as well. Alan Greenspan, when he was at the Fed, he talked about irrational exuberance, but he did not enforce the laws and regulations governing Wall Street. He took a very hands-off approach. That contributed to the problem as well.
Conversely, Republican presidential candidates, many of whom are spending time in Iowa, as you know, argue that the free market can take care of itself, that the market is being overregulated, and that's one of the reasons why the market isn't coming out of the recession. What do you think of that argument?
Well, if we've learned anything after the debacle on Wall Street is that we didn't have adequate regulation of Wall Street. And if you look at what's happened in recent years, the BP oil spill, I mean, look at the mining disasters, look at the private insurance companies like WellPoint putting up insurance prices astronomically. I mean, after one after another, you see companies that are taking advantage of a regulatory environment that is not yet adequate to what it should be. So to say that we need more deregulation or that too much regulation is the problem defies what our experience has been over the last two or three years.
Is it fair to characterize the Obama administration's Health Care Reform Act as having somewhat of a drag on the economy? Speculation and polls showing, too, that employers are somewhat reticent to add to payrolls because of the uncertainty of what they're going to be liable for in health care.
Employers always face uncertainty. The biggest uncertainty they face right now is lack of consumers. In poll after poll, discussions I've had, other people have had, focus groups, you ask employers, what is your biggest problem? Why aren't you creating jobs? You're sitting on $2 trillion of cash, highest corporate profits we've seen in decades. The reason is they don't know that they have enough consumers out there to justify the increasing employment. It's not regulations. It's not health care. It's consumers. That's what employers are concerned about.
Are you saying that the Health Care Reform Act has absolutely no effect?
No, I'm not saying it has no effect, but it has a very marginal effect, and I'm not even sure whether it's positive or negative. Small employers are actually going to face lower costs because of the Health Care Act. Large employers may face slightly higher costs, but again, those costs relative to the huge profits that corporations are now enjoying and relative to the $2 trillion they're now sitting on are very small. If you're asking why aren't employers hiring, it's because there's not enough what economists would call aggregate demand. There's simply not enough buying. Why isn't there enough buying? Because consumers are workers. And as workers, they're not getting enough pay. They're worried about their jobs, and their mortgages are huge relative to the size and value of their homes.
And they're also scared.
Well, they're scared for all of the reasons I just mentioned. Absolutely.
And you mentioned that you would like President Obama to be a bit more aggressive and to be a bit more forceful. Isn't he, in fact, dealing with a split government in Washington that forces him to compromise? I mean, he walked into a federal government where Republicans control the House, Democrats control the Senate. And if he wants to get anything done, he has to move towards the middle. Isn't he doing the logical thing as president?
Well, first of all, he walked into a federal government where the Democrats had both houses. I mean, the Republicans took over. That's right. The Republicans took over in 2010. I think it really is a matter of the bully pulpit. Many people expected that President Obama would utilize the bully pulpit, that is, the office and the ability of the president to summon and mobilize, energize, organize public opinion to a greater extent than he has, or at least to a greater extent than he successfully has. And again, I don't want to sound unduly critical of the president. I think he's done a good job, but I wish he would be a little bit more aggressive. Instead of giving Republicans what they want, instead of putting a bargaining chit or at least a compromise on the table initially, I think that what he needs to do, and he can still do it with the jobs bill, is say, this is what I believe. This is what's good for the country. I hope the Republicans will come along with me. I may have to compromise to get their votes, but if they will not come along and if it's not good for the country, I am going to take it to the people.
And then let's talk a little bit about the mood in Washington. It strikes me that the mood is fairly poisonous. The atmosphere, the political mood seems to be very poisonous, where people are out to destroy each other from the beginning. You mentioned earlier that Republicans said as early as right after the 2008 election that their number one priority was to defeat this president, to make sure that Obama was a one-term president. How do you deal with that political mood?
Look, I don't have a simple solution. It's the most surly, poisonous, partisan atmosphere I have ever seen in my lifetime. You know, when I got to Washington for the first time in the 70s and then in the 80s and then I was there in the 90s, mm-hmm. You know, there was progressively more partisanship, but never, never like we are seeing now. I think what the president has got to do is simply force the Republicans' hands on these issues. For example, Republicans keep saying a smaller government means more jobs. There is no economic theory that I know of that justifies that point of view. Why can't the president simply say to Republicans, what is your idea about how shrinking the government is going to create more jobs? When in eight of the last recessions, in fact, if you include the Great Depression, it's nine of the last downturns, a government has had to expand both spending and also expand the money supply in order to get people back to work. It makes no logical sense.
Let's talk about the money supply and the head of the Fed, Ben Bernanke. What is your analysis of his job performance? Republican presidential candidates this past week suggested he should be fired. They would not reappoint him. One has suggested he wouldn't get very fair treatment were he to go to Texas. What do you think about Ben Bernanke's job performance?
Well, remember, Ben Bernanke was appointed by George W. Bush, and the president reappointed him. I think he's done a pretty good job, but monetary policy, that is, controlling interest rates, can only go so far. I mean, if you reduce interest rates as they have, the Fed, under Ben Bernanke, to near zero, and then done what he calls quantitative easing, which is getting long-term interest rates, we're trying to get them down as well, but you don't have enough demand, aggregate demand, to back you up. It's a little like pushing on a wet noodle. I mean, nothing happens. What you're doing is you're enriching big businesses, you're enriching Wall Street, you're enriching people who are good credit risks. They can get money almost free. But average working people still have a huge obstacle. They have credit problems left over from the Great Recession. Small businesses cannot get credit. Again, you need an aggressive fiscal policy in order to match a monetary policy, if the monetary policy is going to have any consequence at all.
Was it a good idea to keep interest rates low and to say they're going to be low through this X date? I think it was 2012.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good idea. But again, I want to emphasize, without a strong and expansive fiscal policy, you can't really count on monetary policy to do it alone. We're in a very dangerous climate right now. I mean, we are on the edge of a double-dip recession. Most Americans have never really come out of the first major recession. 25 million people are looking for full-time jobs right now. And meanwhile, the global economy is slowing down. I mean, this is not just a debating point with regard to an election year coming up. This is really serious stuff.
So,
and people are, Americans are really hurting.
So in that environment, what would be your advice to this so-called super committee that is coming up with a deficit reduction plan?
I would say deficit reduction is not the primary problem right now. Jobs is the primary problem. And what you want to do is backload the deficit cuts, that is, the spending cuts. If you're going to have spending cuts, don't do them now. That's the last thing we need, is spending cuts right now when the private sector, consumers, and businesses are cutting back. What we need right now is more spending. And that actually will help in the long term, because if that restores economic growth and jobs, you get more revenues, and that helps you with your long-term budget deficit problem.
As I look at my history, it strikes me that every time a Democrat manages to win the White House, one of the first things that Democrat runs into is criticism from the left. The left seems restive. They want to push the president to the left. They're not happy with what the president does when the president compromises. Do liberals have a problem with being in power?
Well, you know, I can say that when we went to Washington in 1992, 1993, when I was part of the Clinton administration, there were a lot of progressives and liberals and people on the left who were very dissatisfied. And that was not bad. That helped push the administration a little bit into more progressive terrain than the administration would have otherwise gone. So I think it's important that people be organized and mobilized on the left, on the right, independents. Nothing good happens in Washington unless there are people who are vocal and mobilized and organized to counter the overwhelming power of businesses and the money that's coming from big corporations and Wall Street drenching Washington.
And look across the aisle at the Republican field as it's beginning to unfold. It strikes me that they're competing with each other to decide who can push for the biggest tax cuts, deciding who can push for the most cuts in regulation. Are they eating their own? Are they in the process of nominating a candidate who can't win a general election?
Well, it seems that way in the sense that the Tea Party doesn't represent America. And a lot of the what Republicans are saying now is an attempt to court the Tea Party.
Right.
I mean, more tax cuts, particularly for the wealthy, more tax cuts for corporations. You know, I think tax cuts for the middle class, the working class, would be fine right now. But they're talking about tax cuts for people who already are doing extraordinarily well, better than they've ever done in this country at a time when everybody else is suffering. That just makes no sense.
Well, get back to the basic question. Are they in the process of nominating a candidate who can't win a general election?
Well, I think that they're in the process of nominating somebody. Well, let me put it this way. I think that it's too early to know who they're going to nominate. But the current group of Republican contenders, Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry in particular, seem to me to be so extreme in their views. Michelle Bachmann wants to put up an actual concrete barrier across the boundary with Mexico, armed with people, with American troops. Perry is talking about getting rid of the IRS and getting rid of the federal income tax, getting rid of the Fed. I mean, you're talking about people who are so out of the mainstream of American thought. I mean, when Rick Perry says, as he did, that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. What is he talking about? I mean, I was a trustee of the Social Security Trust Fund. Social Security is a bedrock that Americans depend on. It's going to be completely solvent for the next 26 years, and you can make it solvent for the next 75 with very small changes.
Well,
that kind
about
of talk about Ponzi scheme is irresponsible, it is dangerous, it is radical in the worst form of demagoguery.
Let's talk about Social Security. What are the minor twinks that you would make to the system to make it solvent beyond the 26 years?
Oh, I would increase the proportion of income subject to the Social Security payroll tax. Right now, it's about $106,000. I would move it up to about $115,000 or $120,000. And that would do it. Then we're not in any problem for 75 years.
What about means testing?
Means testing, we could do a little bit more. Means testing right now is already in the Social Security system to some extent. You don't want to do so much that the Social Security becomes a program for lower-income people and higher-income people says, well, we don't really have a stake in it.
Given the fact that Americans live longer than they did when Social Security was established, does it make sense to move the retirement age far up?
Well, it doesn't make much sense to me because you've got the human body doesn't change that much. That is, people, when they get to be 65 to 70, I can speak personally, your body just doesn't function as well. If you are in a trade that is very hard on your body, it's just not fair to ask people to wait until they're 70 to collect Social Security.
Let's go back to that Republican field. You talked about some of the contenders in there. Give us your predictions. Who do you think is going to emerge from the Republican field?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I
think that if the let's put it this way, if the economy stays bad and if unemployment stays 9% or worse,
right,
and you've got so many Americans who are so disillusioned and angry, they are going to inevitably, I think, gravitate towards somebody who's a fighter, who's also angry, who expresses that anger, almost regardless of what the policies are.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that a Bachmann or a Perry becomes actually more attractive because they are so, furious. And their radical propositions, it's easy to scapegoat the federal government. On the other hand, the candidate who's going to appeal most to independents, and I think is the most reasonable, is probably either John Huntsman or Mitt Romney. And I think that, I consider both of them, if you pardon the expression, the adults
right,
who are running in the Republican Party.
And is there any chance the economy is going to be significantly different in November of 2012 than it is right now? I mean, every prediction I've seen is at least a year of this recession.
Well, let me just lay it out. if we have job growth on average per month, such as we've had over the last 10 years, mm-hmm. we're not going to get back to 6% unemployment till the year 2024.
So it's going
to... So we have got to do something. This is we're now in a jobs emergency. And this is why I am hoping that not only will the president's jobs package be big enough, but that he will take it to the country and sell it to the country. Because this is not just politics. This is really human suffering we're talking about.
And for the benefit of our viewers, we're taping this program before the president unveils the details of that plan, so we can't ask you to critique it specifically. But you mentioned the middle class earlier. Mitt Romney this week issued a 59-point economic plan in which he said he would bolster the middle class by targeting certain specific ideas toward them. For instance, letting them be forgiven for capital gains taxes and any taxes on interest. In your view, what is the best way to bolster the American middle class, which has sort of been buffeted by the past two recessions?
I would exempt the first $20,000 of income from Social Security taxes for at least 2 years, if not permanently. Raise the ceiling to make up that difference, mm-hmm. the ceiling on proportion of income subjected to Social Security. I would expand the earned income tax credit, which is a wage supplement, all the way up to about $40,000 or $45,000. I would have a WPA, a Civilian Conservation Corps, as we had in the Great Depression, and to put all the long-term unemployed to work. It's better that they work and get back in the habits of work than simply look for work. I would have a major infrastructure program. Most of our infrastructure, if you look at highways, ports, bridges, all of the other things that we rely on, suffer from deferred maintenance to a very significant degree, and that's why a lot of bridges are deemed unsafe. I'd put about $500 billion a year into infrastructure spending over the next few years, maybe 2 or 3 years. A major loan program to the states. 49 of the 50 states cannot run deficits, and that means that when revenues decline because people don't have jobs, they have to lay off critical public workers, teachers, firefighters, police officers. I'd make loans by the federal government to the states so they didn't have to do that. There are many things that can be done, but frankly, I do not understand when Republicans say we need to cut taxes for corporations, we need to cut taxes for the rich. That is the last thing that I would ever think about doing, because they don't need the help. Everybody else does. And when Mitt Romney talks about I would get rid of regulations or I'd cut regulations, as we were talking about before, if regulations don't make sense from a cost-benefit standpoint, obviously get rid of them. But we have lived through the past 4 or 5 years of an era of deregulation that has proven to be a disaster.
But you do advocate, just to summarize, if I heard you correctly, you would reduce taxes or even eliminate some of the taxes on the marginal income people. You said lower middle class, perhaps. But you would raise taxes on the rich.
Yeah, I would definitely do.
Am I correct? Yes.
I think that, again, most people who are low income or even medium income pay a lot in sales taxes. At the state level, they pay hugely in payroll taxes. In fact, 80% of Americans pay more in payroll taxes than they pay in income taxes. And this notion of reducing capital gains taxes for people who are earning under $200,000, which is what Mitt Romney is talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many middle-class people do you know who rely on capital gains taxes? I mean, maybe when they're retired, they rely on capital gains. But how many people who are earning $50,000 a year, and that's basically around the middle class, rely on capital gains?
This has been a pretty dismal conversation here today. Not no fault in a critique of
what
you're
saying.
I'll try
to be upbeat.
Yes, but I am asking you now, too, what are the bright spots? What are the bright spots, the possible foundations, cornerstones on which this economy can be rebuilt?
We continue to be a very innovative economy. Not financially innovative. I would reduce the incentives for financial innovation and push more incentives toward basic research and development. I would, for example, our public universities are among the best in the world, but they are in danger of being second rate because there have been so many cuts by states. The federal government could maintain those great public universities. You know, in terms of intellectual capital, in terms of our ability to be inventive, America still is number one. But we've got to hold on to that advantage in the future.
We've heard a lot of interesting ideas from you as a college professor from California. You've been in the federal government. At what point do you have responsibility to take those ideas back into the public sector and try to make them a way to influence public policy?
Well, the most I can do, quite frankly, is to put the ideas out there and to push as hard as I can. I'm not going to... I ran for governor of Massachusetts in 2002, almost... became the Democratic challenger to Mitt Romney.
Right.
One of my great regrets in life is that I didn't have a chance to debate Mitt Romney. I could have put an end to his career right then. But I'm not, you know, temperamentally, I'm not suited to be a candidate. But I can, I think I have some responsibility, as many people do, to put ideas out there, to advocate for what I think is right, and to help people organize and mobilize around those.
So what's your role? What's your role in all this? Are you just a catalyst for sponsoring debate? Do you plan to travel the country and try to make this case? Will you be involved in the 2012 presidential election?
Well, I certainly am going around the country making the strongest case I can make for what I believe needs to be done. And that is a moral obligation I have. It's an obligation I have as a former Secretary of Labor. And I will and continue to do, continue to be available to candidates, but also to anybody who calls. I mean, if a Republican were to call me, if Mitt Romney were to call me, not only would I take his call, I would give him the best advice I possibly can.
Will you campaign for Barack Obama's reelection?
Oh, of course I will.
I want to go back to that question that I asked you and have you zero in on agriculture. In Iowa, we have, comparatively among the states, a low unemployment rate here, I think about 6%. Is agriculture one of the building blocks for this nation, or is it inconsequential?
No, it's consequential, obviously, and the Farm Belt has been really not as hard hit as the rest of the country, in part because, sadly, the rest of the world has had terrible, terrible crop failures, weather weirdness that have caused
droughts.
But can
we leverage it?
Well, there's certain ways of leveraging an agricultural economy. But here's what I worry about for farm states, quite frankly, like Iowa. So much of the agriculture economy is now based on ethanol subsidies. And those subsidies are going to be cut, inevitably going to be cut. That's part of the deficit deal. Mm-hmm. So what do you do then? What's your fallback? You have to diversify the economy.
Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you.
On the next edition of Iowa Press, we're talking with one of the Republican presidential candidates campaigning for the Iowa caucus support, Michigan Congressman Thad McCotter. We'll be discussing how he's expecting his priorities to catch support. That'll be at the usual Iowa Press airtime, 7:30 Friday night and 11:30 Sunday morning. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today.
Archive editions of Iowa Press can be accessed on the World Wide Web. Audio and video streaming is available, as are transcripts, at www.iptv.org.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals.